So we want to continue what we started at the end of last week. We mentioned that if the couple has a boy and a girl, they fulfill the mitzvah period for review. Now they're obligated in the mitzvah of Sheves to continue having children. And the Rambam says that they should continue having children. Every child that they bring into the world is like building a world. And therefore, as long as he has koach, he should continue having children. What the Rambam means by koach, I don't know. We'll try to come back to it. In any event, the Birchei Yosef, the Chidah, at the very beginning of Eben Ezer, is the diet from the Lashon Rambam. And we mentioned this last time in Hilchas Yisurei Bia, Perikof Aleph Halach Chavav. The Rama mentions Zekena and Islanders. And he says a person, Lo Yisa Akara, whether it's a Zekena or an Islanders, because she's not Ruya Lelet. And the Rama was talking about the mitzvah of La Erev Al Tanach Yadecha. And therefore, he should marry a woman in such a way that he could continue to fulfill that mitzvah. And if she's incapable of having children, then he forfeits that mitzvah. Interesting is that Rambam omits ketana. In Hilchas Ishus, he has ketana, Perek Tesvav. And the Mishnah Melech is medayik. In Isuri Bia, the Rambam is talking about a person who has already fulfilled the mitzvah period. He has a boy and a girl. Now he's obligated in the mitzvah of what? La Erev. If he's obligated in mitzvah la'erev, he can't marry a woman in such a way that he's mafkia himself, it makes it impossible for himself to fulfill that mitzvah of la'erev. But ketana doesn't fit that bill, because in the case of ketana, he may be postponing his ability to fulfill the mitzvah of la'erev al tanach yadecha, but he's not excluding himself. Whereas in Hilchas Ishus, the Rambam is discussing someone who has not yet fulfilled the mitzvah period of Rivian. And in that context, he's not allowed to marry a ketana, because if he marries a ketana, he's postponing his mitzvah period for Rivia. So we derive two conclusions from this Pirkei Yosef, from this Mishnah Melech. Again, the two Sephardic Gedolim. They both lead us to the same two conclusions. Number one, that there's no postponement to the mitzvah period for Rivia, and therefore you're not allowed to marry a ketana, even though later down the line he will be able to fulfill the mitzvah period for Rivia. But by postponing, by delaying it, he, shall we say, is being mevatel the mitzvah period. For that he's not allowed to do. But on the other hand, the second chiddush is that as far as la'erev al tanach yadecha, postponement is tolerable. And if at this point he's marrying a ketana, but later down the line he'll fulfill the mitzvah la'erev al tanach yadecha, that's acceptable. So whereas temporary postponement is allowed in the case of la'erev for a couple that has a boy and a girl, it's not allowed in the case of someone who has no children. If someone has no children, he's not allowed to postpone. If he has children, he can't discontinue his ability to fulfill the mitzvah of la'erev. But if he's not discontinuing, he's just postponing, it's a temporary delay, then it's okay. The Gemara in Yevamos on Daf Samach Beis says that Ein ben David ba ad sheyichlu neshama shebeguf. So in effect, having children is hastening the process of Mashiach coming. Now, although we don't necessarily choose to do one mitzvah over the other, because one mitzvah has a certain power within it to bring the Mashiach, I mean, I guess in Lubavitch, I mean, that's the way they would go. You know, we want Mashiach now. But for those who aren't totally oriented in that Ashkofa, then we choose a mitzvah based on halachic considerations. But there's no question about it that Biri Verivya carries with it extra weight insofar as it hastens the bringing of the Mashiach and therefore the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And I don't know if it's just a Agadata, but one could therefore perhaps say that Kol HaMasameach Chasam V'Kala is, the Gemara says, Maila Gemara Brops, Maila of Ki'ilu Bona Achas Michurvis Yushalayim. It means we're on the way towards rebuilding Yerushalayim, towards building the Beis HaMikdash. So it means that every single step along the way, as we get closer to Mashiach, engenders a certain Chovas Simcha. We rejoice because we're getting closer. Every milestone on the way to bringing about the Mashiach requires some sort of celebration and rejoicement. So when we rejoice for the Chasan Kala, what we're saying is, hey, we anticipate, if everything goes well, that this Chasan Kala will bring children. Achi Yechala Nisham Shabaguf is David, Ben David is coming. And therefore, it's another stage in the direction of bringing about Mashiach and rebuilding the Beis Hamikdash. So therefore, it requires a special simcha, Tzkimu Bona, Achas Mikurvas Yerushalayim. The Ramban at the end of Parshas Noso says that the Chanukas Hamikdash engenders a special mitzvah of Chagiga, that we have to celebrate the building of the Mikdash. I don't know if the Ramban is willing to count it in Taryag, but he definitely seems to imply that logically it could be counted in Taryag. We speak about making a siyum on Torah, but also a siyum on the Beis Hamikdash, Shlomo Melech. There's a whole perek in Melachim Aleph, I think it's Perek Ches, that's dedicated to the celebrations for the Mishkan, for the building of the Beis Hamikdash. So one step along that way is the Simcha of Chasan Kala, called Mesameh Chasan Kala. All right. Now for today, we want to talk about the following. The couple is now at the stage where they fulfill the mitzvah period for Rivya. They're up to the stage of La'erev al Tanach Yodecha, but they don't want to have children. Let's understand why. So if they have certain very serious health issues, whether they be physical or psychological, those would no doubt tolerate postponement of the mitzvah of La'erev al Tanach Yodecha. As we said before, not to completely uproot it and discontinue it, but at least on a temporary basis to allow for postponement. And in those situations, we spoke about a chol eshem bo sakana and so forth, the rav, the mora hara, will have to make a shikul and judge every situation individually. There are no pat answers here. How long they should be allowed to postpone it and for what pressing reasons. That's fine. But now, let's talk about the next stage. Even V'la'erev al Tanach Yodecha has been achieved, it's no longer a pressing obligation. The Rambam says that every child you bring into the world is Kibbutz Bona Olam, but Kifi Kocho. And at this point, the couple has decided that they're not strong enough, they're not young enough to raise little babies, to have children. And now the question is an entirely different question. And this is the question of what we call contraception. In other words, what method does the halacha condone once the mitzvah period for Rivya and all its tributaries is behind me? I've already achieved that. So now the question is, where do we go from here? And the basic issue, as we'll soon see, is going to be the issue of Sirus. Okay, we'll take a look at the Gemara in Shabbos. Is it here?
Yeah.
The Gemara in Shabbos derives from a pasuk in Chumash that Sirus is an Issa Doraisa. In other words, sterilization, not only with regard to animals, but even more so human beings with the Kal Vachomer, is prohibited. And the Gemara derives it here in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis, from the pasuk Uma'uch. This is in Parshas Tazria. Uma'uch v'kasus v'nasuk v'karus lo sakrivu l'Hashem u'bi'artzachem lo tasu. What's u'bi'artzachu lo tasu? So the Gemara derives from this the prohibition against Sirus. And right away the Gemara wants to know, if that be the case, why is it that we have here an entire Amud Gemara, which I suggest if you want to learn this Amud Gemara on Kuf Yud Amud Beis in Shabbos, you'd probably recommend it to take an art scroll to help you. I mean, it's all Aramaic descriptions of different potions and ingredients and concoctions that would prevent pregnancy. And this is called in the Gemara's language ikrin, kosel ikrin. Okay? So the Gemara is going to distinguish between two categories. One category is sirus through a maisa, which means a surgical procedure. That's an absolute violation of an isur d'oraisa. In the case of a woman, it's called tying the tubes, if you've ever heard of it. In the case of a man, it's called a vasectomy. These are very invasive surgical operations that achieve sterilization, and these are absolutely prohibited by halacha under the law of the Arzachem Lo Sas. The Rambam dedicates the better part of an entire perek in Hilchas Isurei Bia to the Isur of Sirus. And again, we're talking about a Sirus Biyadayim, not a kosher ikra, which means that you take a potion, a medication, and as a result, you cause impotence, you cause Sirus. And the Gemara here on Daf Kuf Yud Amid Beis tells us an interesting historical bit, but it has halachic significance. And that is that Jews had non-Jewish friends who, in order to find favor in the eyes of the Jews, very interesting twist, what they did was, they would take an ox that belonged to a Jew and they would sterilize it through surgical operation. The reason they did that, because the ox works a lot harder, has a lot more power when it's sterilized. The Jews couldn't do it on their own animals because of the law of Sirus. So the Gemara vacillates back and forth, could they do it through a guy? It's kind of like the sugya of Amir Eliakim Shmuz. And the Gemara comes to the conclusion that to tell a guy to be Masaris an animal on your behalf is itself a violation of an Isur d'oraisa. What conclusion do I derive from that? What's the nature of the Isur Sirus? It's not the Maisa Sirus that's Asur, per se, I mean that too, but Grav Sirus is also Asur. And the Gemara says, therefore, the Goyim understood that the Jews would not be allowed, according to their religion, the Jewish religion, to instruct them to do this process, and therefore they would do it on their own. Kind of like as a gift on behalf of the Jews. And the Gemara goes ahead and says that we're afraid that if the guy does it on his own initiative, eventually the Jew is going to ask him to do it for him, which is a violation of an Isur d'oraisa. So the Gemara says, we're not going to allow a guy to take the initiative and do it for a Jew so that the Jew could benefit from it. That's called harama in the Lashon HaGemara. Harama with an ayin. It means that they consent the Jew. There was a knas that was instituted. He's not allowed to benefit from this animal at all. He's got to sell it. He has to give it away. And there are all sorts of tili tilim shalom. What the Jew is allowed to do with this animal in case the guy does it. So just to summarize, the Isur d'oraisa of Sirus, which is derived from this pasuk of Be'artzachem lo sasulchem, that includes not just a Maisa Sirus, but even a Gram Sirus. Fine. However, the Gemara says that that only applies if the Sirus was done surgically. However, a Sirus al Yidei Refua or Zrika, the Gemara establishes here in Shabbos on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, is different. Okay, we'll see what the word different means. It's not as severe of an Isur as a surgical procedure. How is it different? The Gemara is not clear. The Rambam in Perek Tes Zayin, which as I told you, most of Perek Tes Zayin, Milchus Isurei Bia, is dedicated to the love of Sirus. The Rambam says in Aloch Yud Beis, second, Hamashke Ikrin Li Adam. Now we're going to see that this word Adam refers to a male and not a female. In just one second. So Hamashke Ikrin Li Adam Kidele Sarso Hareze Asur Vien Lokin Olaf. So if you look in the Sefer HaMaftech, there's a whole pilpul here amongst the Achronim and interpret the Rambam. But the most, I think, healthy, so to speak, or predominant view is that the Rambam holds that for a man to take a trufa, which will affect his body in such a way that he can no longer reproduce, that is a violation of an Isur Dorais of Sirus, under the halach of Gram Sirus. However, because he did it through Grama, we alleviate him of a Chiv Malkus. And again, it depends what yeshiva you learned in, but in some yeshivas, the language that they use to describe this is called a Lav Tofel. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. There are many lavim in the Rambam where the Rambam says that he's chayav, but ain malkin also. I'll give you one example. It's like, if you nenem yisuri hanoa, like orla, klaya, kerem, bas v'cholav. So the Rambam says, hareza over v'ain malkin also. You know, it's a lav tofel. It's sort of a secondary lav. So that might be what the Rambam here. But then the Rambam goes on to say, V'isha muteres lishtos ikrim shemisar sinoso. Ad shalom teilim. The Rambam doesn't qualify. He gives an absolute license allowing a woman to take a kosher ikrim. What we want to do is we want to see where the Rambam got that from. And that's going to be a Gemara about the wife of Rav Chiya. I'm looking for a Gemara Yevamos. Oh, here's Gemara Yevamos. It's the last itty bitsy Gemara in Havah Yevimto. It's Samachayim and Beis. And the Gemara tells us, Yehudis the base of the Rav Chiya, Havi Le Tzar Leida. We'll see the significance of this. The wife of Rav Chiya was described as someone who used to suffer great pain in childbirth. And she did a whole shtick. She came in front of her husband Rav Chiya and asked him the following question as she prepared this kosher ikrin for herself, but he didn't know that. And he asked her, Isisa, a wife, is mifkida period of Rivia? Is she obligated to miss a period of Rivia? Because that's my focus, Tanoim, you remember? Right here in Yevamos Samachay. Shinichachomim who say, Kivshua, Darko Shalish Lifosh, as opposed from Yochim and Broka, Puruvu. Lachem, for Lachem means Pru Revu, means both male and female. So Rav Chiya answered her, Lav. Ozla, she went Ashte Samada Krosa. So she drank this potion that made her into an Akara. Lubisofi Gloy Milsil Rav Chiya. Rav Chiya found out about it. Amrullah, he said to her, Echud. Rashi says that Echud is a Lashon. Like a krechts almost. I wish it had been different. Rashi says, "Umiyitain shalosha sis." Had it been, I would have been happier had you not done such a thing. Yoladetli chada karsa achrita. Rashi says, "Vitelidli od karis echad im shnei bonim." Now I don't know if bonim means males, and he was hoping for twin boys, but he felt Rabbi Chiya that he got shortchanged. But the bottom line is that a woman is allowed to take a kosher ikrit. That's how the Rambam passes. And it's also brought down in Shulchan Aruch. This is Siman Hey, which we skipped, but this is the part of Siman Hey that becomes relevant to us. Let me read it to you. Hamashke kosher ikrit. This is Sifyut Beis Li Adam. So Hareza also being lokinol. The Isha Muteres Lishtos Ikrin. Kidelisar saw Achelotele. Once again, no qualifications. But here there's a Pisre Tshuva. So make a note of it, if you will. The Pisre Tshuva is Sifkat Yud Aleph, Os Yud Aleph. And he writes, in the name of the Yamshel Shlomo, there in the Sugya of Rav Chiya's wife, at the end of Habal Yevinto, the Ein Mutal Isha El B'Yeshla Tsar Leda. The Gemara was not coincidentally mentioning, as a matter of a fact, that she, the wife of Rav Chiya, suffered great pain in childbirth, but indeed the heter for her to take a kosher ikrin was conditional on the fact that she has tzar leda.
How do you see it from the sugya?
It doesn't. The sugya just tells us, as a matter of fact, that she had tzar leda. Right. So comes along the Yamshel Shlomo, which again, you know, the Yamshel Shlomo is a very interesting sefer. It's written by the Marshal, of course, but what he does in the Yamshel Shlomo is that he summarizes sugyas la'alacha. It's almost a more modern reflection of the Rif, but whereas the Rif is very much connected to the Gemara, the Yamshel Shlomo will jump ahead and he'll integrate all the Rishonim as if they were in the Gemara itself. Here, in this case, he comes up with this Chiddush. And this is going to have a powerful impact, la'alacha l'maisa, because all the poskim are afraid of this Yamshel Shlomo. And the Pesachei Tshuva goes on to say, Ayin Tshuva Chasam Sofer, that's already more of a contemporary Tshuva, Shenishal al din ze be'isham it's ta'eres be'hiroyon v'leidah. What do we do with a woman who's suffering greatly when she has, when she goes through the pregnancy and the birth? Isharius le'le mishte kos ikrin. Would she be permitted to drink the kos ikrin? And this is a permanent, irreversible sterilization. And he comes to the conclusion, and this is another chiddush in halacha, which is not, this is even beyond the Yamshel Shlomo. He says, Isha shelo yolda adayin, if she's never given birth before, I'm going to skip the next three words for a second, lo tishte kos shel ikrin. What are the three words that I skipped? V'lokima shevets. A pela v'chiddush l'tzam sofer. I think we mentioned it once in passing, many months ago, that perhaps a woman, although she's exempt from the mitzvah of biri v'riv, she might be obligated to the mitzvah of shevets. Here you see it. He offers another possible heter, even if she hasn't fulfilled the mitzvah of shevets, she has no children. L'hatzil es atzmo miyirokon v'tzar leidu. You know, certain women during pregnancy, their entire complexion changes, and that's indicative of some sort of blood disorder that's very dangerous for a pregnant woman. It's kind of like in the case of Mila, if I can compare it, hemophilia, you know, where the Gemara says that if two children die from Mila, you don't perform Mila on the third child. He says, Tzar Leda V'chadome. But then, even if he has these two conditions, or these two alternative conditions, not A plus B, but A or B. You know, either that she's already fulfilled Sheves, or alternatively, even if she hasn't fulfilled Sheves, she suffers Tzar Leda. He says, even within the context of those two possible matirim, he's not going to give a carte blanche heter. Why? He says, Kol zeh hayu b'pnuya. This only applies to a woman who's not married. Inami afilu b'nesua k'debesu d'Rabbi Chiya. Or if she's married to someone like Rabbi Chiya, then we'll be matir ha taking the kosher ikri. And why is Rabbi Chiya a mitigating factor? He says because b'yameyim at the time of Rabbi Chiya, hayayachal lisa ishal ishto. This is before what? Chayv d'Rabbi Gershon. Let him marry another woman. Ol Gershon al Karcha. It's also Chayv d'Rabbi Gershon. V'im kain, imu mitua ve'banim, if he's like Rabbi Chiya and he really desires to have more children, and she's blocking that, so we'll give him two options. Rotsa l'kayim le'erol tadif yodef, yochol lisa acheres, ol l'garish esu. He's not in a no-win situation. He has a way out. Avol ha'idna, Deika Cheir Domain of Gershon, Tzricha Rishus Bailo. In other words, now I would say the following, that the husband has to decide that we've gotten to the point where we've fulfilled whatever obligations we have within the context of La'erev Al Tarek Yodecho. And therefore, he gives her the green light to take the kosher ikrim. Omnam, however, Imhu Eino Gotza Legarsha, if he doesn't want to divorce her, but at the same time, gam lo lite lo rishus, he doesn't want to allow her to become sterile. Nearly, it seems to be, the ena mechuyevus letzar atzma. He can have more children, but she doesn't have to subject herself to this enduring suffering. B'yesh letzar gadol, v'akol lefi enei ha-mor. Every mor ha-ra has to judge all these different variables. So let's just summarize. According to Chassam Sofer, a man, if he wants to go on and have more children and fulfill la-erev, and he feels like he can still do so, he shouldn't be prevented from doing so by his wife, who clandestinely, without even telling him, takes the kosher ikrin. On the other hand, even as far as she's concerned, for a kosher ikrin, you have to have one of two possible heterim. Either she's suffering from tsar leda, right? Or the other heter was kfar yolda, that she already had children, or at least one child. So again, that's irrelevant to the husband. So so in order to allow a woman to take a kosher liquor, you're going to have to ask a whole barrage of questions before you get to give her the green light. First, you're going to have to figure out what her situation is, irregardless of his. Has she achieved the mitzvah of Shemitz? That's the one. Let's say she hasn't achieved it. So we'll still give her a shot. Does she fit into this category of tsar leda? Then we'll allow her to take. Okay, that now you solved half the problem. Okay, so let's say either A or B, so you're allowing her to take her. But now you have to ask another question. What about in the context of marriage? Can she block his ability? Now, if he has the ability to marry a second woman, or he has the choice, the decision to divorce her, and she doesn't, you know, we don't require her approval, that's one thing. So then her taking a kosher ikrin is not blocking him from having children. But if on the other hand we have Cherem Debrei Gershom, and he won't be able to marry a second woman, nor can he divorce a Bal Karcha, then she's really waving the red flag in front of him and saying, "Ad kan, I don't want any more children." In that case, the Chassam Sofer says that her Idna, now that we have Cherem Debrei Gershom, she needs Rishus Baila. Now, if she doesn't get Rishus Baila, because he's Toiv Yeladim, he wants more children, so then I guess he's going to divorce her. The Chassam Sofer doesn't say whether she loses her ksuba or not. But the Chassam Sofer does allow her to take the kosher ikrim if she is suffering, to use his terminology, tsar gadol. Now again, what his options are in this case, you know, he's going to have to weigh the situation. If the Mor ha-Ra will determine that this woman is justified, she's suffering tsar gadol, and therefore the Mor ha-Ra will paskin that she can take the kosher ikrim, then the next step is to ask the Baal what his next move is going to be. Now, if he's absolutely adamant in having more children, and she is in effect blocked him because he can't marry a second wife, then he has the option of divorcing her. It doesn't seem from the language of the Chassam Sofer that if they have a number of children already, he can block her from taking this kosher ikrim to the point in which she's violated her shibudim in marriage, and he can throw a get against her will. So the Chassam Sofer doesn't go that far. So again, all this applies to what we call permanent sterility. Now, if you're talking on a temporary basis, so for that, I have something for the Olam if they want to read. This is a tshuva from the Chavetzelis HaShorom. I got it off the internet. It's 3 pages long. Rabbi Nachum Manish Babad of Tarnopol. And he speaks about temporary sterility, so to speak. Meaning, he says, Isha Sharofa Sivole Shetire Tiroshal Tisaber. The Rofa says she shouldn't get pregnant. I'll call upon him Lishona Achas for 1 year. And she comes along and she wants to know, is she allowed to use some method of contraception without telling her husband? And why doesn't she want to tell her husband? She's afraid that her husband will want to separate himself from her if he knows that. And after this long tshuva in which he claims that according to Chassam Sofer she would not be allowed to go ahead and do that, he disagrees with the Chassam Sofer. And he says since she's only doing it for a temporary period, she's using contraception without telling him for a year or so, then she's allowed to do it for the sake of Shalom Bayis and deny him that information. So if anyone's interested, I have that here for you. You could go through. It's a pretty interesting tshuva. Yeah.
Rabbi, talking about a panuya before the Chassam Sofer gets to marriage, he makes these two conditions, one of which, if the woman meets one of them, then she's allowed to drink the kosher yidrin.
Right.
One was if she's already been mekanim mitzvah sheves, or if she's a tsar later, if she falls into the category of tsar later.
Right.
But if you're going to say that she hasn't been mekanim mitzvah sheves, how could she fall into the category of tsar later?
I don't know exactly. We were discussing this during Seder time in the Beis Medrash. It seems that that perhaps the doctors could somehow test her and know. I don't know if there are hereditary factors or psychological factors that come in that she fits that category.
If she had miscarriages, still, well, maybe it's...
Right, that's true too. That's an excellent answer. So that's what I wanted to show you. One more thing in the Machaber. The Machaber says, Osir lovo lekusi lesaris behema shalom. V'im lokha hu me'atzmo v'sirsa. Im herim Yisrael b'dobr zeh. If we suspect that the Jew set it up so that the guy would do this without actually telling him, constant also, that we impose a knas on him, mochran li Yisrael acher. Okay, then it gets into a lot of details about what he's allowed to do within the context of the knas. So can I show you just to hold on to this for a moment? Okay, let me just see where I'm holding here. So I would just like to ask the following question. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch following suit allow a woman to take kosher liquor without any qualification. The Chassam Sofer, based on the Amshel Shlomo, is not allowing carte blanche. He's making a conditional tsar leda, and then he adds another possibility of Shevis and all that discussion. Apparently, what is the Yamshel Shlomo in his diuk? Because the Gemara's story was that she, the wife of Rav Chiya, had tzar leda. What is he assuming? He's definitely not embracing the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch who say that carte blanche, a woman's allowed to take kosher liquor. Does anybody know where I want to take you with this?
Does it sound like if it's dafka the case of Eishes Rabbi Chiya, then it's also a woman who already has children, that she's already in the time of Mitzvah Shevis for sure also?
No, but I'm just asking a different question. The Rambam says that Mashke Ikri, if it's a male, he violates the Isur of Sirus, but he doesn't get Malkus for it. Then the Rambam jumps and he says a woman is allowed to take a Koshal Ikri. Where the Chassam Sofer fit in? I mean, the Yamshel Shlomo,
there's also the possibility of saying that we were speaking about Gram Sirus, that
right.
Maybe her taking the Koshal Ikrin indirectly causes him to not be able to have...
Well, no, I'm asking you differently. As far as she's concerned, where would the Chassam Sofer put it down? Again, you're saying that she's causing him, but again, we're talking about an unmarried woman.
Oh, so maybe the Yamshel Shlomo also is holding of Shevis? Is that what we're saying?
No, I don't think so. I think what the Yamshel Shlomo is saying is that the Iser Sirus for a woman is only Durabana. Meaning, there are three levels here, three Madrigas. There's the Hersh Darga, you know, the highest Darga, and that's for a man to take a Koshal Ikrin. And that's a Chiv Malkus, the Rambam says. Then you drop down one level, one notch, when you get to a woman who's taking a Koshal Ikrin. The Rambam holds that you drop all the way to the bottom, and a woman is allowed to take a kosher liquor. What the Yamshel Shlomo is saying, no, a woman is not allowed to take a kosher liquor. But here you have to ask yourself the question, is it a Doraisa or a Darabana? Because keep in mind, the Isur Sirus Doraisa applies to a woman just as it does to a man.
The Rambam holds there is no Isur Darabana.
Darabana.
And the Yamshel Shlomo holds there is an Isur Darabana.
And what was the matter of the Isur Darabana in the Yamshel Shlomo's frame of reference?
Sarleda.
It's a little bit similar, if you will. Again, I don't want to make comparisons to what we discussed the other day about a Chola She'ein Bo Sakana. That we will alleviate such a person from Darabanans. Again, only if they're Darabanans Lakula. You know, they're not Chamurim, but they're Kalim. We gave the example of Shemasa B'Tavuz, which is Yodin B'Yoma. Here too, if we assume, again I'm making a gigantic assumption, that for a woman to take a koshal ikrin is a gzeirah derabanan, because before you know it, people are going to come to the mistaken conclusion that there's no isur siris by a woman, which is absolutely incorrect. There's an isur deraisa siris by a woman. But here, with a koshal ikrin, there is no isur. So the Yavshe Shlomo is assuming there is an isur, but it's an isur that we're allowed to override for the sake of tzar. Of tzar. Again, the Mora Horo will have to determine whether or not this woman fits into that category of tzar gadol, as he calls it. But for the sake of tzar gadol, we're going to allow a woman to violate what would otherwise be a derabanan of koshal ikrin. So we're having a kind of heimamru veheimamru situation. We always seem to come back to this. You know, it haunts us almost, right? We spoke about Nemonis Ha'em al Abbas, right? That why she believed on the Bas, because the Magid Mishnah is heimamru veheimamru.
Rabbi, tzar gadol or tzar leida is only a din and pain. We're not talking about sakanas nefashos necessarily.
No. I think for the sake of sakanas nefashos, everyone is going to be mati.
Even being masaris b'mituach. I mean,
why not? Even if it's for the sake of it. But again, you might say that in such a case he has to divorce. That we didn't get to yet. But assuming that it would be, you know, there's no way out of this dilemma except for that, and that's a violation of the deraisa, then only for the sake of pikuach nefesh would you be able to be mati.
Why did we bring in these two atonements from Achaber and the Rambam in last year to say straight up that a woman could do what she wants?
Well, I don't know what we said in the last year, but if we did say that, I stand corrected. What I meant to say is that according to the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, it seems to be mutter. Then we look at the Pisei Tshuva, and we get a whole other picture on it, because you get the Yavshel Shlomo, and you get the Chassam Sofer. I mean, these are Gedolei HaPoskim for the Ashkenazic world. And they're not going to take the Shulchan Aruch as a carte blanche. They're going to be very nervous about a woman taking a koshal ikrim. And for two different reasons. One is because she herself is not allowed to take a koshal ikrim. And we have to look for a matir. Where the matir is because she has to bring children into the world. And she already did. That would be one matir. The other matir would be, well, you know, she's a chola in this case. And then we have to take another consideration is, and that's where the Chassam Sofer comes in, and then what are her obligations vis-a-vis her husband to facilitate his ability to be Misayelo, that he could fulfill his obligation vis-a-vis bringing children into the world. So you're right, Nisan, if we left it hanging last week as a carte blanche head, then we were relying on good people, you know, Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. But for Halach Lamaisa, we have to be much, much more careful about a woman taking a koshal ikrim. Just 1 second. Yeah.
Now, all of this is speaking about taking a permanent koshal ikrim. So okay. To what extent can we apply this to today's non-permanent contraceptives? Oh.
So again, so a temporary koshal ikrim, that's this chavetzel sasharon.
Is he arguing on the chasm sofer in the Yom Shalom, or is he just saying that they would even agree?
Correct, absolutely. He's saying that the chasm sofer is talking about a case of a permanent sterilization on a temporary basis. Again, you have to know why and what the heter is. He's presenting a heter which is based on the fact that the physicians don't want her to get pregnant. But on the other hand, it's a temporary medical procedure, non-surgical, and she's taking a medication. Now, Rav Moshe finds she has a tshuva about a man taking a temporary koshal ikrim. You know, science has become so sophisticated, there are all sorts of permutations. So there's a possibility of a man... Again, for a man to undergo surgery, even on a temporary basis, is a lav d'oraisa. But to take a medication on a that will only affect him temporarily, Rav Moshe's make him. I have to tell you that nobody accepted this kula, Rav Moshe. But the logic of Rav Moshe is he claims, again, maybe he spoke to his son-in-law to figure out the biology of it, because he claims that what happens is, when a man takes this kind of medication, it doesn't have any direct influence on his reproductive organ. it somehow affects the entire body in such a way that he can't perform the Tashmish Shamita the way he has to. So he says that that's already a double grumma. You know, it's like grumma to grumma, because first of all, he's taking a medication. He's not doing an active series. And secondly, even that medication has no direct impact on his reproductive system. But I have to tell you that it's an interesting shaila, you know, in theory, but frankly, I don't know anyone who relies on it. I haven't seen it brought down in any of the sfarim.
Who is that?
Chafetzel Sashori. His name was Rav. He has a long name, Rav Manish Tarnopol. You could see he was a Meshiv who lived after the time of the Tzam Sof, probably the turn of the century. And if you go through the names of the Rabbanim that he's communicating with, some of them are pretty famous Rabbanim. So, you know, this is not some sort of, you know, modern, you know, this is good stuff. Okay?
So why can't we just rely on that in all cases?
Again, but only in the case of temper.
I'm saying nowadays, everything's temporary. Like any birth control.
I don't know.
I'm saying a regular birth control that's temporary nowadays.
Well,
the majority of women are not. Well, again, you should ask
that question when we get to the pill. Because what we want to do during the rest of the shiur is to go through various methods of contraception and their difficulties in halacha until we get to the pill. Once we get to the pill, then you want to ask yourself, can a woman take the pill without notifying her husband? That's where you want to quote the Chafetz Sashon.
I'm saying even in a straight-up heter. I'm saying last year we were okay, getting a term, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, you're going to this, it just seems to be hushed whenever you want, for as long as you want.
No, he's talking up to a year.
Oh.
It's up to a year. I thought I made that clear. Let me read it again. I'll read it again to you. He says, v'humavtiach, meaning the rofe promises her that if she takes this medication, shebemeshach shona achas, during the course of the year, tischazik v'tisrape v'tuchal l'shamesh achakach k'darka u'laholit. Okay? So we're talking about up to a year, it seems. Yet I can only invite you to go through this tshuva because we're really kind of pressed for time. You know, I do want to get to see what book. All right, so that's the tshuva. Now, let's assume we're talking about what's called non-surgical sterilization. Okay? And you have this tshuva that I mentioned. There's also a tshuva from the Toras Chesed. And he throws a curveball into this. The Toras Chesed is Rav Shneur Zalman of Lublin. In Eben Ezra Sima Mem Dalid, he writes that there's another Easter called Chovel Biatzma, which has nothing to do with period of Erivin. And he has a long tshuva in which he claims that taking anything orally that could mess up your body, mutilate your body, is a violation of a lav de oraisa of Chovel Biatzma. So, again, I'm not presenting any halacha lemaisa here, but you just have to know that weaving through this whole sugya of taking medications that will affect your body, it's got many different considerations. All right, let's go on to the main topic for today's shiur, and that is contraceptions. Okay, so we're talking about various methods of tashmish hamita, which will guarantee, in quotation marks, because there is no guarantee, but ki'ilu kaviyof will guarantee that she won't become pregnant. So we've passed all the issues of period of Rivia, all the issues of la'erev al tanach yedecha, everything is in your back pocket, you know, we're beyond that, and now the question is, what do we do, halacha l'maisa, to prevent pregnancy? And the issue, of course, is hashchasa zera. He's motzi zera levatol. So the first thing that you have to know is that according to almost all poskim, hashchasa zera levatola is an isur doraisa. And that's based on a Gemara in Masechta Yevamos. And a Tosus in Yevamos on Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis. The Sugya in Yevamos on Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis is talking about Er V'Onam. And the Rambam codifies that Sugya in Hilchas Yisurei Via Perek Chaf Aleph. Let me just read to you the Rambam in Perek Chaf Aleph, which most of this Perek is dedicated to the Isur of Hashchasa Zera. And the Rambam writes in Halacha Yud Ches, Osu Lahotzi Shefa Zera Levatol. Lefichach. Okay, listen carefully. This is the punchline. Lo Yia Adam Dash Mi Bifnim Vizorim Mi Bachutz. This means that he interrupts his act of intercourse in the middle so that he gives his zera outside of the woman's body. He interrupts his relationship with the woman. The Rambam would seem to indicate that that too is an iser of Hotzah Zera Levatola Do'oraisa, even though it came about through Tashmish. Menachem B'Yad, the Rambam says, is lo daishu iser gadol, he's called the noef, I mean, all sorts of terrible things, which I don't want to go into, you know, you look at the kids, if you want to send shudders through your, get ready for Yom Kippur, you know, everything's awesome. But the chiddush of the Rambam is that to be dashmi b'fnim v'zorim b'chutz, that too is an iser doraisa, and that is not at all simple. It seems to be based on a Gemara about Er V'Onan, which is on Lamed Dalet Amud Beis in Yevamos. And the Gemara says that V'Shiches Arzo, the Gemara says K'maisa Er V'Onan, and what's the Maisa of Er V'Onan? Dash mi bifnim v'zora mi bachutz. Now, I mentioned to you Tosis at the beginning of Yevamos, on Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis, Tosis is talking about a maisa bia. But the Maisa Biyah is interrupted. And he says, Yeshbo Mishum Hashchasa Zera. And the Pashtus in Tosfos is that he's talking about a Doraisa. So the first method of birth control, because I want to, let me say by virtue of a little bit of introduction, I think we're going to have three categories here. We're going to have category number one, which is absolutely also clear, unquestionable. It's a violation of Hashchasa Zera Levatola. On the other extreme, we're going to have cases that I think are clearly mutter. It's going to take a while till we get to them, but keep them in mind. And in the middle, there's a tremendous gray area. Okay? So, as far as what's crystal clear that's asur, and Rav Moshe has a whole discussion about this in Chelek Aleph, and you can find it on page Kuf Nun Hey. I was trying to print it out, but I didn't succeed yet. That this is an Isur D'oraisa. Tosfos says, well, what about that Tosfos that I mentioned, Yevamos? What about having relationship in such a way that there's no possibility of pregnancy? For example, in the case of a Ketana, or a Zkena, a Muberes. So Tosfos says there's no Isur Hashchasa Zera in those cases. Why not? Because it's Kederech Kol Haaretz. So the rule seems to be here that as long as there's a Maisa Tashmish, which is Kederech Kol Haaretz, and we have to understand what that means, Kederech Kol Haaretz, but it's normal, it's natural, then there's no Isur Hashchasa Zera even though you know up front that there's no way, no how, that this zera could lead to hirayon. And Rav Moshe takes this a step further. He says, even if a woman doesn't have a base of vlad, what we call in English a hysterectomy, Rahman al-Islam, they removed her base of vlad, nevertheless, mutal lebailu l'shamsha, says Rav Moshe, because it's derech tashmish. Again, the Chiddush of Rav Moshe, even though this is a derech tashmish in which the zera cannot even reach the base of vlad, It can't enter into the womb because she doesn't have a womb. And nevertheless, it's kederach kol ha'aretz and it's mut. Okay, so that's clearly what we know. What we don't know is something called moch. Mem vav chav. Which I guess the best translation I could come up with is a sponge. So a woman inserts a sponge, boso makom, and that's going to prevent the zera from entering into the cervical opening and meeting up with her zera. And the Gemara tells us in Yevamos, here on Yudbeis Amud Beis, Gimel Nashim Mishamshos B'moch. This is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that three categories of women are Mishamshos B'moch. Rashi says, Mishamshos b'moch, Mutaros lases moch, B'mokom tashmish, Kidei, excuse me, Kishahem mishamshos, Kidei shelo yisabru. So they shouldn't get pregnant. So Rashi interprets it thusly. Three categories of women are allowed to use a moch, so they shouldn't get pregnant. Who are these three categories? Mu'uberes, meinika, uktana. Ktana, shevetis aber, v'shevetomus. A young girl will has a great expectancy, or I shouldn't say expectancy, a threat of dying in childbirth. Meinika, shevetigmo, v'naviomus. Maybe her child will die. Mu'uberes, ishevetasa, ubra sando. Okay, this I don't understand. If anybody wants to study it, vakasha, what's the danger, we don't pass it like this, of having relations with a pregnant woman? Okay, but that's... If you want to say something about that? I mean, it's not on my agenda for 3 months.
So it's like 3 months, it's mazik, 3 months, it strengthens.
Yeah. So I don't know what he means, because he says, shemateosa ubra sandal. I don't know. Let's leave it for a while. I mean, Rashi says terrible things here. It's really scary. I don't know that the scientists today... I don't want to say something and then regret saying it because I don't know enough about it. But that's what it says over here. Now, the Chachamim disagree with Rav Meir. Even in these three cases, they don't allow a moch. Mishum shenemar, it says, Chachom omer achazu v'achazu misham shos kedak v'oleches u'min ha-shamayim yiruchamu. Let God take care of it in heaven. Nishum shenem ha-shomer psoim Hashem. Reminds me of the famous tshuva of Moshe about smoking. You remember that? Shomer psoim Hashem. So this is the sugi of shomer psoim Hashem. So just on the side, the first question I want to ask you, we pass like Rebbeim, but what were the Chachamim thinking over here? And apparently, and this Moshe touched on a question you asked me last time, what's sakana? The Chachamim understood the following. A plus B equals C. Or A plus B equals not C. Okay. C is sakana and not C is not sakana. If A, less than half of the population, in less than 50% chances of this creating a danger, a threat, and B, Shomer Psoim Hashem means that people don't take this seriously. In other words, in the minds of the populace, it's okay. Again, exactly what percentage I can't tell you, but I can tell you one thing, it's less than 50%. If it's 50% or more, there's no Shomer Psoim Hashem, because that's ain't something on the next. But if it's less than that, let's say, for argument's sake, it's 10% of the population as in danger, so Shomer Psoim Hashem, those who do it with tmimus, that Hashem will protect them. Halach l'maisa, we pass like Rebbe. And therefore Rashi says, Shalosh nashim utaros l'sham shos b'moch. Mishum sakon. And basically, the machlokas now between Rav Meir Chachamim boils down to sakana. How do you define a sakana? So the poskim say that oy bazoy, if we accept Rashi's pshat, clearly, what would you say about moch? Is it mutter or zasa? Knock knock. Anybody home? No. Again, Rashi saying it's because sakana is mutter. Okay. Our question is not sakana. We're doing contraception today.
That's not
so fun. No, we're talking about a couple that they've just done their thing, you know, they have 99 children and they don't want to have 100, you know, whatever it is. It's beyond the Rambam's kofel. So now they want to have relations as a husband and wife without the danger of, without the, you know, we're taking precautions that she shouldn't get pregnant.
We don't know the context of how she is. Actually, we're talking about it before,
but then why does he say sakana? Rashi says the whole head to him is from sakana.
Because in the case of Peru, but if you're in
Kai Peru,
maybe less than a sakana.
If he was Makai Peru already, oh, that's what you want to say. But.
Well, with Kutin, that can't be the case, or it would be hard pressed to say that that's the case.
Yeah. But again, the lashon of the shas is shalosh noshim shams is promote. Doesn't seem to call for anybody has.
Oh, okay.
So let me mention to you some of the poskim here. Okay. So amongst the poskim who say that moch is asur, the gadol shebekulam is the Achiezer of Chaim Ozer. And once again, I was hoping to print that for you. I didn't get a chance. So it's in Chelek Aleph, Simon Aleph, and Os Chav Gimel. He repeats himself from Chelek Gimel, Simon Chav Dalet. He has in two places. And many, many other poskim accept the Shita of Rashi that the Heter of Moch, because we accept Rabbi Meir, is Sakon. Why? Says the Achiezer, because a moch, to some extent, b'miktas, he says, interferes with tashmish amita. And it's not considered kederach kol haaretz. And therefore, there's an isur of hashchasa zer levatol. Now, how does sakana help you for the isur of Hashchasa Zera? That's going to be our next question. But if you don't mind, before we get to that question, just to let things sink in and get an overall perspective here. So again, to summarize, the Achiezer is the Rosh HaMedabrim, but there are many, many poskim, including, we'll see, the Chazanish, who stand on the shoulders of the Achiezer, and they accept Rash. The Heter, to use of both, is because of Sakon. However, believe it or not, most Rishonim reject Rashi. And the Shita Mekubetzes in Masechta Ksubis, in Daf Lamites, has a whole different understanding of Rav Meir. And that is that Rav Meir was not saying Sholosh Noshim Mutaros L'Sham Shos Kermo, as Rashi would have it, but Chayolos L'Shamish Kermo. Rashi is almost the Das Yechidah, that's why it's a pellet to me, that the Achiezer, Vesiyasa, they all rely on Rashi. Comes along the Shita Mekubetzes, and he says, no, the Machlokas Shem Rav Meir and the Chacham is a different one. They want to know, Rav Meir and Chacham, whether or not this is Sakana. If it's Sakana, then you have to use a Moch. If it's not a Sakana, you're allowed to use a Moch. But clearly, even without Sakana, Moch is Mutter. So that according to this whole slew of Rishonim, Tashmish B'moch is always Mutter, Tamid Mutter, even without a Sakana. The question between Rabbi and Chacham in those three categories of women is whether or not that's considered Sakana and Afkadina, whether Chayav, whether Zachiv. The Chazanish, as I mentioned to you before, was Machmir. He did not allow a Heter Moch. But the Mekil, and here's the Rosh HaMedabrim on the flip side of the Achiezer, is the Marshal. And following in Suda, the Marshal, is the Taurus Chesed that I mentioned to you before, Reb Shnei Zalmi Lublin. And Veil Al-Moch, straight across the board, for every woman, even without Sakon. Now, what's important is to go through the Pisrei Tshuva in Simon Chav Gimel. If you could do me a favor, if you don't mind, Adam, open up to Simon Chav Gimel. I may have some pages there. You see Simon Chav Gimel?
Yeah.
You have it? I think I underlined the most important lines in the Pisrei Tshuva. I hope I did. Okay, it's Pisrei Tshuva Beis. And he quotes, which I don't know if I underline both, but he quotes both Rabbi Kibeger and the Sam Sofer. You have that there? Anyway, whatever you have underlined, if you could, if you don't mind reading it out loud. Okay, go ahead.
Imu teres l'shamish b'moch lifnei tashmish.
Yeah.
Because of the fable b'sugi of the gimel nashim b'shamshes b'moch, while the ain sarif l'garashe b'shvil zeh, afa gab the tzvicha losei smoch kodim tashmish, daf al bikei noy havi begeder hashchot zerlum kivan shahava derech tashmish v'yevshalo l'shamish imo b'derech achem ibn asakon.
Okay, so listen to this. And both of some Sofner and Kibagin accept this reasoning. And I don't know, don't, maybe this is what you were saying before. Whether or not it's considered kederech tashmish depends upon whether it's sakon or not. It's pretty amazing. He says the following. If it's a sakon, and the only way he can maintain his marriage relationship with her is by using a moch, then it's considered kederech kolot. So in effect, the heter of hishimush b'moch is based upon kederech kolaretz, but only because it's a sakon. That's a fascinating shita. And he says, "V'makom sakkana chashivi tashmish amita b'moch tashmish kider kol aretz." Aval ima bal lo kiem chovaso al pidin. Okay, now here it depends upon whether he was mekayim pirpi or not. If he has not yet fulfilled his obligation, then the law requires him to be Megarish's wife, to marry a different woman who's capable of having children. And therefore, since he'll have to divorce his wife, just 1 second. So again, if he has to divorce his wife, we read it again, then he's saying that it's mutter. To use them all. But only on a temporary basis, I think. He's going to laugh. You follow what's going on here? In other words, this is very similar to what we discussed earlier. That she's in a situation where the Rofim say she can't get pregnant. It's dangerous for her. So the question is, how do they resume normal relations? The answer is to use them all. Why? Says the Chassam Sofer Vega that once she's in this danger situation, then the only possibility for this couple to have relations is with a moch, otherwise she's going to die. And the other alternative is that he divorce her. So if he's not divorcing her, then the way of tashmish will be the moch. Why? Because that becomes kederach kol aretz. No, it's kederach kol aretz is not objective. It's not something you can define for every human being. But kederach kol aretz, which again will determine whether it's hashchasa el vatol or not, is subjective, and it depends upon whether this is the only way he could have beer with her. If this is the only way he could have beer with, otherwise he's putting her into danger, that becomes kederach kol aretz. Now again, will he have to divorce her, will he not have to divorce her? That may depend on other factors. Was he mekayim in superior period, was he not, and so forth and so on.
Is this more machmir than the Achiezer? Because the Achiezer might say that even if there is another way in which to do it, as long as there's a sakana, so then there's a heter to use the moch. But these might say, well, if there's any other way to do it, so there's no heter. It sounds like they're being, this is the most machner shita. Yeah, but so is the Achiezer. Meaning, there's nobody who says it's Asur Lagamrei, right? What?
So why is he being more machmer?
Well, he's being more machmer because according to the Ahiezer, even if there's another way to prevent Arayim,
such as?
Any other way, whatever it could be, the Ahiezer would still say that it's mutter because of a sahana. But according to these, they say that the only reason why it's mutter is because Derech Kol Ha'aretz, because it's the only way to do it.
So wait a minute, Moshe, maybe I didn't say it correctly. Both the Ahiezer and the Chassam Sofer are both saying one and the same thing in the initial Yisod. Then we'll see where they part ways.
Okay.
They're both saying that the Heter Moch B'Mokom Sakana is because it's considered Kiderech Kol Ha'aretz.
Okay.
What the Chassam Sofer is saying is the following. That if the Baal has not fulfilled his mitzvah of period for Rivia, correct? So he needs period for Rivia. She, on the other hand, cannot give birth because of Sakana. And that's what the Rofin have determined. So therefore, he will have to divorce his wife in order to fulfill the mitzvah period of Arivia. At that moment, we're going to say that it's Kederach Kol Ha'aretz. Why? Because now that he's going to have to divorce his wife, he has no other option, no alternative to continue a marriage relationship without a moch, because the moch is the only way that he's allowed to have relations with her and prevent her from pikuach nefesh. Just one second. Oh. Now here's where the Chassam Sofer will disagree with the Ahiezer. Whereas the Ahiezer is willing to say carte blanche, since she's in a sakana situation, therefore the moch is keder kol ha'aretz. The Chassam Sofer is going to add another condition. What allows us to make that jump, that leap, from Sakana to Keder Kol Ha'aretz? The fact that he has not been Mekayim his mitzvah peri verivya, and therefore he cannot have relations with her unless she uses a moch. Why? Because he's chayv to what? To be Megarish her. Is therefore, here's the nafkivina, according to the Chassam Sofer, you can only allow shimush b'moch in a situation where the rofim will determine that for a very limited period of time, let's say for a year or two, whatever it is, she's in danger of having children. In that situation, he doesn't have a chiyuv to divorce her, and he'll use a moch. Why will he use a moch? Because his other alternative is to divorce her. So within the context of this marriage relationship, the only possibility of resuming relations is if he uses a moch. But if, on the other hand, the rofim will tell him, in that very same situation, that this woman, for the rest of her life, is not childbearing because of the sakana, then Adarav, he has to divorce her. But that's for a different reason. We're not talking about Ashkos and Zerul of Adola. We're talking about his chiv to divorce her in order to fulfill his mitzvah period of Arivia. But if it's a temporary situation, then we're going to allow him to maintain a marriage relationship with his wife using a moch, because that's going to be keder kol ha'aretz in that particular situation.
Was it mashmah here that the Chassam Sofer is only matir a moch acher tashmish? Meaning she removes the zera from the base of lad. Not that there could, because it...
After the Tashmish.
Right, meaning that what if it would be before, according to the Chassam Sofer, that it's easy.
Okay, so that part of the tshuva I didn't go through, but there's another possible paragraph that Adam points out, is that even in a case where the Matir Moch, some poskim will only be Matir Moch after Tashmish. That's a whole other issue. We're assuming now that, like the Ahiezer, will be Machmir and require Sakana as the precondition for the use of moch, right? But we're going to allow moch b'shas tashmish. And why? Because sakana is going to convert the tashmish b'moch into a tashmish kedarka and remove the isur of hashkos zeh. you have to add the proviso that that's because otherwise he'll have to divorce her. So that's the business of the tzamtzum. So we'll try to brush this up a little bit more. Now in our time we have something that's similar to a moch, but let's not confuse it with a moch. What's that? None of you know? Okay, so I have to introduce a new term that you never heard of. It's something called a diaphragm. Oh, so now you're nodding your head. So, yeah. If Rabbi Berzon knows about it, then I can know about it. Well, what's the chat? All of a sudden. All right.
I just know it was like a moch.
What is it? How does it work?
Okay, we're going to explain exactly how it works. And again, we're looking for the breakthrough tshuva. The breakthrough tshuva, similar to what we discussed last time, is the Marsham. Remember, we spoke to the Marsham. Shalom Shvadura from Berzhan. That was a city in Galitzi. I come from Lita, so it's a different part of the world. Anyway, so the Marsham says the following. He says that even the Achiezer and all the poskim of Machmer with regard to Moch would be matir in the case of a diaphragm. A diaphragm is considered kederach kol ha'aretz. What is a diaphragm? It's a plastic disc that is placed inside the osa makom at the front of the cervical opening, and it prevents the zera from entering into the cervix. But it doesn't in any way affect the, as the Marsham calls it, shnei gufim menim zemizeh, that two bodies are enjoying their physical contact, which he says is keder kol ha'aretz in bia. So again, whereas the use of the sponge, or in the Gemara's terminology, the moch, is an issue according to a large group of poskim who learn like Rashi that the heter moch is only mokum sakona, the diaphragm, says the Marsham, is mutter even according to those poskim. And why? Because in contrast to the moch, it doesn't interfere with the ma'aseh bi'ah at all.
So the moch, there's an awareness that the moch is there. And then
right. There's some sort of contact between the aver and the moch. Here, as far in as the aver goes, the diaphragm is a little bit beyond that. However, Avosai, you'll only understand what I'm saying when I get to the punchline of this year, when we talk about the pill. But I personally would not carte blanche recommend the diaphragm. Not so much because I think the diaphragm is an iser of hashkas zera and it's not keder kol aretz, but I think that there are two issues with diaphragms. And sorry, Echsa, I have too much experience in this. That first of all, when a woman inserts a diaphragm, it has to be absolutely tight and therefore it causes rips very often. And sometimes even her own fingernails dig into her basar, and the blood is going to almost inevitably become dam nida. I don't mean that it's technically dam nida. What I mean to say is that because of sphincters, the poskim are not going to be able to determine, because these cuts are so small, they're so minute, that they're going to say it's dam nidus. Now, even though I'm sure you've heard all the legends about the Morei Horah, they know exactly what everything is. You know, we can tell stories about that from now till this, but nevertheless, it's identical to dam nidus, and therefore it's going to create problems. In addition to that, there are health issues as a result of this scratching. So therefore, you know, again, I have no objection to someone who wants to use a diaphragm, but just keep in mind that you got to use it really carefully. Now, Reb Dov, do you have with you Reb Shimonides' book on Nida? Could you do me a favor and open up to page 122? Because he adds something about the diaphragm from Moshe Feinstein, but I don't remember what he says. I hope it's the same printing. There's only one printing of Reb Shimonides, right? Okay. Anyway, the Marsham is Matir Halacha Lemaisa use of a diaphragm only B'Makom Sakam. Only Mokum. Even the Marsham is not willing to just, you know, for the sake of convenience, allow you to use a diaphragm. But again, that part of the Chupa of the Marsham, if we see, let's just see what Reb Shimonides says.
Even though it's Bederach Kol Haaretz without Sakana. He said,
I guess he's saying because of the issues of Damnidus here, he doesn't really want to encourage you to use a Dayan.
Oh, the Marsham himself mentions the Damnidus?
So.
Yeah.
He brings here, he's talking about two sections in the Guf. The body is referring to how she doesn't have Sakana when she's wearing a diaphragm.
Oh, I see.
And there he says that she has to remove it.
Remove the dark.
But then when she does remove it, she has to do that in Karada.
It's the coup.
And then in the notes, it's probably you have money.
Oh, that's what I have in mind. Yes,
and
notes.
In the notes here, he brings in a corpus from Hatsir. Then he says that Moshe Feinstein told him.
Oh, that's what I wanted.
That if she finds dam on it.
Oh.
So he said, first of all, you can't judge it like a kesed. I'm paraphrasing. Because there's no macholas goes to makom.
Because there's no what?
Macholas.
Oh, right.
And then he says, "What sort of lachko and also is a petza katan via deha, v'tzipor neha kishech nisaso v'hotzi aso, diniyish lachosh is a establishi tahora."
Wow.
Af benimsa high betipos dam.
Wow. That's my mind. Only Rav Moshe could. You see, Rav Moshe probably would not have published that in the Chubas, but he sent it over to Rav Shimon Ida.
He wrote it. He wrote it in the back of the Chubas, in the back of the
Oh, that itself appears in Rav Moshe's handwriting?
He's quoting from the Chubas.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought that was something he heard about Pet.
I'll take it with him.
See, here what Rav Moshe's willing to say.
Yeah, he wrote it.
Yes.
The Chubas that are in the back of the Sefer are published now in Chedekes.
Okay. Which is out of print.
Which, all right, we won't. There's a lot of whatever.
I just bought it. Yeah. That's not
at least these there aren't any suspicious.
Right. Shimonida is who was. No, but that's a Gavaldiga Kula. You know, he says that if there are tipos down, like on the diaphragm itself, you could be making that it's coming. That it's coming from a mak. But otherwise, the first part I understand very well that you can't treat it like a kesem. You know, a kesem you could say. Again, in our time, it's a little different, but we do what's called tliya, say a bed bug or whatever. Here, it's the also makom. You know, there are no bed bugs in the also makom. That's where the diaphragm is coming out. So once again, Rabosai, I don't know what to tell you. I think I would discourage use of the diaphragm if I can convince you that we have a better alternative, That's where I want to leave you.
Even though Rasham is saying it's only the Makam Sakana, we're not saying that? We're talking about Makam Sakana now?
No, even without Makam Sakana, the posting already... Because again, the Iker is that it's not Kedera Kolaritz. But I think the Rasham would probably say that if the technology for use, the practical use of a diaphragm has improved, the Rasham is going back almost a century... So then there's less worries about all the other side issues. Okay. Now, Rabosa, remember I told you that there are three categories here. There's white, black, and there's gray. So, to interrupt, Tasha Shamit in the middle, that's clearly prohibited. There's no head to that. To use a diaphragm, I would say, again, notwithstanding the issues that could arise, that's clearly mutter. I have another case... which I think is clearly awesome, even though the Achiezer seems to be matir. And that's the use of a kiss for a man to cover his organ with a kiss, which is called a condom in our language. It's almost like a dirty word today, but in the language it's not a dirty word. And Reb Chaim Ozer raises the following chakir. He says, should we be mekil because it's shnei gufim nehenim zemizeh bekir of basar? Which again, I don't know what condoms were like back in Reb Chaim Ozer's time. He died 80 years ago. And what they're like today, I'm not an expert on this, but apparently, they're doing good business, so I guess there's men in the kiruv basar. Or he says, perhaps we should be machmir because the zera eino nichnas li'oso mokom. The zera never actually enters in to the woman's body. So again, the tzadahet is to say that it's enough because the shnei gufim menim zemizeh. Now see, I guess he's saying that the...
That means it's there in the heart, that's what it means?
He doesn't use that term, but if you remember, we quoted the Marsham, who says that Keder Kol Aretz is defined by Gufim Menim, as opposed to the case of the Moch, which interrupts. Here, in this Tzad, in the Achiezer, he's saying that it really doesn't interfere with what normally would be a Maisabir, Maisatash. In his other Tzad, he says that the Zera doesn't even enter. So, alright, it's true that it's Gufim, if not, you know, Gufim Menim, but this is not Tashmish Kedarko because the Zera doesn't even enter. You know, in all the other cases that we had, Chachli Zera enters into the body of the woman. And therefore, in the second Tzad, he calls it Hashkos Zera Levatol. How do you think he paskins? Like which Tzad? Like the first Tzad. And he's making it. It's the only place. It's sort of like the famous Achiezer about, you know, using electricity for, you know, for Favdol, you know. I don't know if anybody, well, I shouldn't say it. Maybe there are people somewhere in the face of the earth who do that. But, you know, if you saw that, you would be Nishtoymen. And the guy would say, well, as I state in Achiezer, you know. But here also, you know, for someone who uses this kind of method of contraception, and he says, well, I'll prove it to you from the truth of the Achiezer, fine. So, if he's an Achiezer man, you know, that's okay. I hope he accepts all the chumras of the Achiezer too. But in any event, the poskim rejected this Achiezer entirely. Even if a makom sakana, they don't allow a use of a kiss. And the one who triumphs this cause is the Marsham himself. You know, the Marsham who seems to have been very lenient with regard to a moch, is very machmir with regard to the kiss. And I don't know if you ever heard of the Dovei Meisham, that's the Chabina Rav, who had a tremendous impact here in Eretz Yisrael. He too is machmir.
And what's the harad mechalik between a kiss and a moch? Because the zera.
Because at least in the case of a moch, the zera enters into our body. Ultimately, it's absorbed in the sponge, but here, the Zera never even really leaves.
It enters, even if it doesn't reach the base of Lag, but it enters at least a little bit.
Correct. Now, Rav Herschel Shechta Shlita, in an article in the RJJ Journal, says that even the Achiezer asks a kiss. This is a big chiddush. He says that if you read the Rav Chaim Ozer's question carefully, Rav Chaim Ozer was only mekil in the case of sakana, meaning the question itself that was raised was about a sakana. And really what Rav Chaim Ozer was doing, according to this reading of Rav Chaim Ozer, is he was comparing the two cases of moch, which again he held was only mutter b'makom sakana, with a case of a kiss b'makom sakana. However, for shelo b'makom sakana, then for sure Rav Chaim Ozer would ask him. If Rav Chaim Ozer prohibits using a moch shelo b'makom sakana, where at least the zera enters into the osel makom, the sperm enters the vagina, but it's blocked from passing through the cervical canal, kol shkein, that he would agree that the use of a condom which prevents the sperm from even entering into the vagina would certainly not be considered kederach kol ha. So that, I think, on the other end of the spectrum, is clearly us, and possibly even a coin to Chaim Ozer. But let's jump back to clearly mutter. And here we have again a tshuva from the Chavetzelos HaSharon. It's on the previous page of these pages, in which he says that the use of any sort of, what word should I use? Jellies or whatever to kill the sperm after bia?
Spermicides
is mutter. Absolutely mutter because it's bia keder kolaritz and there's no ashchas zera. Hatashmish, he writes, who legamre keder kolaritz. So let's just get an overview and then we'll say a few words about the pill, which is, I think, really the... What? With the Kal V'Chomer, right? In other words, what happened, again, even though Adam, as you pointed out, in the Sugya Moch, this is not clear, Rabbeinu Tam Sheik, is that she's not allowed to clean out the Zera after the bia.
No, you could after Rabbeinu Tam, before you can't do a Moch.
Oh, so not Rabbeinu Tzadok. So which one of the Rishonim says the other way around? That you look it up in the Sugya Bot. Anyway, so let's just very quickly summarize. We have, on the one hand, the case of Zora Bifnim, of Vadash Bifnim Vizora Bachutz. That's clearly also in all cases. We have the Kiss, which is Shalo Keder Kol Haaretz, according to the Poskim, and possibly even according to Chaim Moser. So those are the two cases that are clearly also. We have these spermicides and jellies that are used after Tashmish that are clearly mutter.
Even not.
We have the diaphragm that's clearly mutter, except for certain care and considerations. In the middle, in the gray area, we have moch. Some poskim, based on the Rambam and the Machaber, will be matir moch straight away. There's no hashchas sera. Others will be very careful about it and require mokum sakon of the chas. The Sam Sofa goes even further than that. It's got to be someone who otherwise would divorce his wife. And finally, we get to the pill. And Rav Moshe Feinstein, in Eben Ezra Chelek Aleph Simon Samach Hei, wants to be matir the pill for the same reason that the Chavatzelis Hashoron was matir the sprays, because it's Tashmish Kederech Kol Haaretz. Ein kan hashchos azer v'ein kan afro l'tash v'shabita. There's no interruption and no interference with tash v'shabita. It's only temporary, and now we can ask about, does she have to get rishus from her husband, right? And then we have the chatzal sasharon, if she's got medical considerations, and if she tells him, it might undermine the shalom bias and so on and so on. But let's assume the couple is working in tandem, in unison, the pill is okay. Says Rav Moshe, he doesn't like the pill. Why doesn't Rav Moshe like the pill? For two reasons. First of all, he says it plays with hormones. It's so cute to see when he writes English words in Lashon Kodesh. Sometimes I have to read it 15 times to figure out, you know, the diaphragm. It's like two yuds and an aleph. And all. Anyway, then he says as a result of playing around with hormones, a woman will see dam when she wasn't meant to see dam. And it creates all sorts of problems in dam nidus. And therefore he cannot encourage use of the pill. And secondly, he says that there seems to be scientific evidence that there may be a chashash sakona. It might be unhealthy for her to use the pill. Now, Rav Schechter quotes a book called The Update on Oral Contraceptives. This update is itself 35 years old, from 1970s. And he writes here in the name of Dr. Kaniel, he writes that the oral contraceptive is the most effective method of birth control ever developed. It comes closer than any other technique in the history of mankind to satisfy all the criteria of the ideal contraceptive. Now, he says the incidence of side effects accompanied by the use of the pill is still a matter of debate, but continued study has pointed out that these possibilities of side effects are very rare. Now, unfortunately, I do not have for you a more, if anyone could take this on, it would be much appreciated, a more advanced scientific study of the pill. But I'm pretty sure that a gynecologist can prescribe for a woman, depending upon her hormone levels, a dosage of the pill that's appropriate for her. Do you follow what I mean? So there are low dosages and high dosages. And therefore, I think in every case, the physicians should be consulted. And if the gynecologist recommends the use of the pill with, you know, X amount of dosage, then l'daiti dover poshuhu, that this is the answer to our original question. Because foams and jellies and diaphragms and all that stuff, they all are problematic. one way or the other. They're very far from ideal. They don't guarantee contraception, and they, as we said before, they entail certain technical problems with dambinus and so on. But the pill is the ideal method. The only thing is, these are the questions that you have to address. And it seems that with every passing day, the pill becomes less unhealthy, so to speak, or more reliable. The studies are coming to this conclusion. What we did not discuss in the shiur, because I'm not prepared for it, but it's a very heavy issue, is the use of the pill before a woman gets married, before the chasana. Why would a woman take the pill before the chasana? To avoid a chuppas nidah. And that, to this day, remains a very hotly debated topic. A lot of it is because of not the halachic considerations, but the reliability of it. Medically, it's a woman's system, before a chuppah is a little bit fluky, as we'll soon see when we get to the laws of the chuppah. And therefore, the pill is out. But again, things are getting better and science is getting more developed.
What's the debate of it?
What do you say?
What's the debate on it?
Whether or not the pill, which is, sometimes a woman will start using the pill 4 months before the wedding.
Right.
It's not like in Europe, where a woman went to mikvah and then they announced the chasana 10 days later. That's the way it was in Europe. But today, you send out the invitations, you call up the wedding hall, 6 months in advance. So you got to avoid a chuppas nidah situation. So I'm just saying that sometimes the use of the pill, instead of regulating the woman, they have the opposite effect.
Now, built into all of these...
And then there are shots also. Also a whole mess.
Built into all of these... all these questions with these specific types of contraception, is this all under the umbrella of, well, first we have to make sure that there is a heter to be able to use these things at all? Or are we saying that, look, because the Achiezer said that only by moch, then you need to rely on sakana, but maybe by a diaphragm with a pill or spermicide,
you don't need a heter of sakana. Talking too long, I can't follow.
I just want to know.
I just say one thing? You tell me if this helps at all.
Yeah.
If not, then the floor is yours. Today's discussion, as last discussion we had on Thursday, revolves around two issues: Roman numeral number one and Roman numeral number two. The first issue is period of ribbon. Second issue is hashkas and zev. Meaning, if you're going to talk about contraception, you've already left period of ribbon behind.
Okay?
Now you're ready to move on.
Gotcha.
There's no Easter period of ribbon, there's no bitlase, no batir. What are you left with? You're left with hashkas and zev levatol. So now our question becomes, within the halachic framework, what is the least problematic or the most highly recommended method of contraception? And it may have taken me an hour or so to say this, but I think the answer is the pill. Okay, good.
Rabbi, so we're saying the geder kfikoch, according to